Sundara Lingam.
Strong Christian Bhakta.
In fact, that is one of the topics I had done for discussion today. I suppose you mean... Yes, the end of Ceylon question. Didn't it really, apart from the origins in immigration of the 19th century, as a issue, didn't it crop up around 39-40 when...
It started in 1923, when the government of India passed the Emigration Act, preventing the immigration of Indians as plantation labor or indentured labor, as they call it. And the deputation had to go all the way from Ceylon, led by Sir Wilfred Goodes, asking for exemption from the Act for recruitment of Indian labor to Ceylon plantations. That was then 1923 or 24. Soon after the Emigration Act was passed.
And what was the result?
The result was the government of India exempted Ceylon from the restrictions imposed by the Act, subject to certain conditions and terms. They were all set out in a small pamphlet, which was sort of an agreement between the government of India and Ceylon. As you probably know, at the time both the countries were under British rule. The most important condition involves that the recruited Indian immigrant laborer in Ceylon was to enjoy full civic and political rights if he decided to be settled down permanently in Ceylon. And if at any time he wanted to get back to India, he was perfectly free to do so. It is because of that agreement plantation areas of country had the requisite number of laborers for work on the estates.
What induced the Indian government to make an exception for Ceylon?
Because I believe partly proximity, easy access to ingress in and result, partly due to the existence here of a population which had ethnic and linguistic associations. Tamil language was a sort of common bond. And above all, because the government of Ceylon was willing to accede to whatever terms the government of India.
But then, I presume, with the Ceylonese ministers coming in and influencing policy decisions of the Ceylon government, the picture changed in 39-40.
As a matter of fact, the Mahanayaka letter, the picture changed when Gesar Nayaka was elected to the Legislative Council as early as 1924-25.
That early?
D.S.N. Nayaka had been brought to my house and introduced to me by his brother Pastor Nayaka. I was to be D.S.'s political group. The first first question that I raised to B.S. Naika was this question which is now known as the Hindustan question. I was thoroughly upset by what I saw in the province of Uwa in memorial stone civil service. It was humiliating, really, to see prosperity and plenty over the barbed wire fence, and there was both squalor and misery on the Canadian Pacific side, on the other side of the barbed wire fence. You know, I have to sign what were known as bills under the medical bond ordinance. Under the ordinance, government doctors had to answer all calls made by superintendents of the states. When you were a neighbor of a bill, all the superintendent had to do was use a telephone or send an immediate message to the DO of the area, who had to attend. For the attendance, of course, was paid. The DMO had often to walk uphills and down dales, travel long distances, pass through Kenyan single villages. He could not treat those Kenyan village peasants. They were in love. You see how hard-bitting it is. In 1925, as soon as B.S. became a member, and this introduction to him, and I raised this question, the government of Ceylon was having in view the appointment of a committee to go into the question of subventions to assist Indian immigrant labor. That question arose partly in connection with the implementation of the agreement between the governments of India and of Ceylon for the Indian Immigration Act. Well, I had B.S. appointed into the committee. I made him indeed. We got all facts and figures. And you'll find the dissent, the reward of which I wrote, B.S. won't sign up. You find the I set out. The kernel of a problem, namely, we did not want the Indians in this country on the terms which had been conceded. In fact, in that letter I pinned to Mahanayaka Thero, I quoted one or two passages. Finalization paper of 1925. All the facts and figures were obtained by me through DS. The whole question was carefully analyzed with strict regard to facts and truth. That's how the question arose. From the time on, it has been going on and on and on and on. 1939, in Jawaharlal Nehru, as a emissary of Mahatma Gandhi, to deal with this question, I had to bring both Jawaharlal Nehru and DS together one night,
purely on this question.
Purely on this question. Purely on this question. One night we sat from about 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock in the morning. And we did reach an agreement. That agreement has been reproduced, enhanced, and was challenged to reproduce it. But alas, the rivalry of SWRD Bandar Nayaka and Kutalavala made it impossible. Or the Board of Ministers to accept that agreement. And that agreement, mark you, gave full effect to the points on which DS had asked me to get Balaram's consent.
I don't quite follow how the opposition between Kotalabala and Banda influenced the border ministers.
You see, they were rivals in regard
to the succession.
Exactly. I used to call it those days in regard to the prime ministerial top hat. Who asked me the better? Indophobia exponent. That's how it goes.
But then, didn't the other members in the board, especially under DS's influence, couldn't they get a majority?
They could have. That's my own feeling. They could have. But they were rather frightened as to the reaction among the singular voters. At that time, these people were elected members. And this singular Tamil, Indian Tamil trouble was very much there.
But presumably that sort of feeling then would even apply to DSN Nayak.
But frankly, whatever the personal feelings of DSN Nayak, purely from the political angle, question of statesmanship, I think he was compelled to acquiesce in certain measures which would enable the inflow of Indian labor into the plantation area. Without that labor, the prosperity of the country would have been gravely jeopardized.
So, if this agreement was reached between Nehru and DSN Nayaka, that wouldn't have put a stop to the inflow?
No, it would not have. If it had been implemented, all the Indians who were in the public services, that's how the trouble started.
Yes.
Both SWRD Bandaran Nayak and Kotalabala had given notes to all Indians employed in their departments and their ministries. You see? If they had continued, then there would have been trouble.
Indian government would have reacted.
That is right. In fact, he came as a emissary of Mahatma Gandhi.
To clear that problem.
Clear that problem. In fact, it was my argument, the final argument that I had with Jawaharlal. I was a bit of adamant. I quoted that argument. I put it up, Jawaharlal. What did you say, Jawaharlal? If Chinese labor, British capital and a British entrepreneur exploited Indian soil and gave away the profits to China and to Britain. What did you say? Jawaharlal could answer that question. That's an effect I used. I have quoted some of the actual words.
What was the gist of Nehru's demands when the talks began?
His demands were, these people have come under certain conditions. They are bound to fulfill those conditions. They are entitled to certain human rights. They must have those human rights. You have employed them without imposing any restrictions. At the time of recruitment, you have no right now, summarily, to get rid of them. We can understand the force of your not recruiting any Indians hereafter, because I am in full agreement of the talk that I had with Jawaharlal. As a matter of fact, in 48 hours, it is going to Madras, He made the government of India from the government of Madras to ban immigration. There were 40,000 in that.
Why?
Because our leaders here at the time did not want any more Indians.
Yes, I see. So if I follow the chronology correctly, he came with these demands at the talks. And at the talks he modified his position and a kind of compromise was reached.
Quite right. Quite right.
But this compromise was rejected by the Board of Ministers.
Quite right.
Whereupon he reacted with this ban.
He did not react to this ban. He accepted the request of D.S. Naika.
Oh, I see.
And my suggestion.
Oh, that you...
It was not an act of resigning like that. He merely acceded to our wish. No recruitment of Indians into Islam. He was very legitimately about that.
I was wondering whether D.S. was playing a two-handed game, and while agreeing to this compromise, he used the Board of Ministers later to undermine the...
No. That's quite untrue. Quite untrue. I tell you why. After the first meeting at the Board of Ministers in Jawaharlal Nehru, Jawaharlal Nehru came back to the place where he was living in a hut. My wife and I had to look after their creature comforts. So he came back to Nagaland, getting away early tomorrow morning. He called the flight secretary and said, arrange for the plane to be tomorrow morning. What's the matter, Jawaharlal? Why all this? Oh, you're all. Minadiri, it's all right. Don't worry. Well, what is it that I've been bad about? Then he did certain things. So I immediately rang up. Yes. Have you gone and done? You can't come to Jawaharlal Nehru, you never come to anybody. Let me see the verbatim record of the proceedings of your Board of Ministers. They've not been taken down. He took me down to the clock. I saw through the proceedings. Of course.
Who had opposed the agreement most?
The Bindu was most violent was Sadi Ali Bandar Naik. Of course, that was not a vocal check. The man who was vocal was Sadi Ali. So I asked the Nandis, if you speak to your friends, let me know on what points you want generally to agree. Of course, he was willing to accept whatever I suggested to him. But I wanted him to consult Assembly of the Bandar Naik. Contrary would also follow suit. So there was consultation. And certain points were given to me. So I said, oh, I think it should be possible to get to him on these points. So I went and spoke to Dora and told him, here, I think after dinner you'll be late tonight. I'll bring these along here. We'll sit it. And there was Uttar Pai, who was agent of the Government of India here. He was in attendance on the front of the Government of India.
What's his name?
Uttar Pai. IAS. B-I-T-H-A-L-P-A-I. ICS. And we discussed the matter for a very, very long time. And I made Jawaharlal to agree on the points specified. And it was decided that I should draft a note of interview, decisions reached, have the thing ticked up with Uttar Pai, and have typed copies given to D.S. as Mr. Jawaharlal. We did that. I had the original with me in my own handwriting. The manuscript was created by Uttar Pai. I showed it to D.S. in my manuscript form. He agreed, had it typed, copy given to Jawaharlal. Jawaharlal also gave to contents being this. I think myself, Jawaharlal felt he had given him too much. So when the matter went up before the board of ministers, and when Bandaranaike started all over again with other matters, he thought he could get still more in regard to the civic rights of those who had already been recruited. The thing turned out to be flop.
Jawaharlal refused.
He thought, well, if you gentlemen don't want it to bliss, nothing of it.
And then what happened?
Whatever he went back.
They didn't accept it.
They didn't accept it.
But then why did he, in conformity with the agreement, why did he ban immigration?
Because I wanted it, no, I wanted.
But I thought the agreement had not come about.
No. The agreement in regard to the action taken to stop Indian laborers who had in fact been employed by the government, Ceylon and various departments, that could not be rectified.
But the other aspect?
Other aspect, no. He could not answer my question. You see, how will you react? Was the question put to him. He went back and said, no, nothing to you. But there was a loophole. While the agreement affected Indian immigrant labor, it did not affect the businessman, the free man, the trader who came to Ceylon. They were in fact the worst exploiters.
So it was banned, but wasn't the ban only temporary? During the war they lifted it, didn't they?
In the war only for purpose of rubber. You find the history in the Survey Report. You find reference to that. That was in connection with the war effect. When they wanted more latex produced, and the single laborer was not equal to the task, and they were employing solitary. That it is in that. I used that fact in case of the debate. And I said, the time may come here in Ceylon when you must continue to have these people. And my own feeling today is this, what our friends may say, to make this country self-supporting in all matters of food, it will keep back a certain number of Indians. In the next 5 or 10 years, this country will be more than self-supporting. Today you can go to Bangalore and see how the Indian laborer has transformed the jungles, howling jungles, into prison gardens, producing food crops.
Now, before the war, there was another series of talks when a deputation went to India.
Deputation with what?
With the Indo-Ceylon question.
The Bajpayee matter. You are thinking of the Bajpayee delegation.
What was the purpose of that?
You will find there, S.W.R.T. Bandaranaike puts in a nutshell his opposition. His opposition to Indian immigrant labor was that he did not want the Indian representatives in the legislature to hold the reins of power by being able to determine by their marginal vote who is to run the government. You find passages there. Burbage Report, this is actually in the one of the session papers. He says, we do not want Indians to interfere with the balance of power. That was our question.
I haven't, I'm afraid, gone into the history of this Bajpayee delegation. What made them go there? What did you do? Was it the question of inflow of labor or the question of removing Indians from the Ceylon?
That was, you know, soon after the breakdown of Jawaharlal Nehru's negotiations here. The government even yet took up the matter.
A second step.
Oh, you see. The European plantations here were seriously jeopardized because they could not recruit labor freely as before. So, in that connection, they had to go to India. And this Bajpayee conversation took place. When the Bajpayee conversations, I think, were about to be finalized, the war to account, if my recollection does not fail me, then the conversations and negotiations that we carried on in Colombo, the war prevented, and we said that this will be off till the war is over. And when the war was over, we had the Colombo Constitution coming into play, and the matter was taken outside the heads of all these people.
Yes, in fact, an interesting question arises with regard to these negotiations in 39-40. I was wondering what the attitude of the British officials in Ceylon was to this question.
The attitude was kind of simple one. All of them felt and felt rightly. The prosperity of Ceylon depended largely on the plantations. If the economy of the country was more or less centralized in the plantation area, was prejudiced, then the country's own development would have been seriously affected. The officials were all on the side of the plantation capitalists, clearly. Having regard to facts, I think more than 50% of the revenues of Ceylon at the time were from the tea estates.
So in that sense, they were opposed to the policy, to DSS policy and your policy?
Altogether, but we had our own way. Darling, we worked with that. Don't forget that. We had our way. Right, come on, would you mind? Please put the pair one on one of the other. I think I'll rather have the pair as is. This is my boy, please. Both of the videos are right.
And of course, then coming a step further to 47, 48, and then.
My decision from the cabinet, yes?
Yes. Before the Indian and Pakistani Citizenship Act was passed, were there further negotiations with India?
Yes! One of the first questions raised by the DSS and Naga cabinet was this Indo-Ceylon question in relationship to citizenship rights. Is it affecting you?
Oh, that's nice.
Citizenship question, immigration, Indian-Pakistan President Citizenship Bill. When these matters came up in the cabinet, I just put one question to DSS. DS, have you had the consent of Jawaharlal Nehru to these bills? He said, no. In that case, I can't agree. You can negotiate with him and see whether you can't come to some sort of agreement. If you don't do that, I warn you, you will find any other Indian other than Jawaharlal Nehru dealing this question will be more adverse to us than Jawaharlal Nehru. So please try and get some agreement with him when we proceed further in this matter. He accepted it. He went all the way, 1947-48 December, January, I believe, to Delhi. It's all subject matter of a session of paper. The whole thing is there. They are when they ultimately said they are going to agree to disagree. And the Jawaharlal Nehru made an awful mess of the whole thing, frankly, from an Indian point of view. If Jawaharlal Nehru had been firm on that occasion, this question had been settled satisfactorily and simply.
You mean he was not ready to compromise?
No! Jawaharlal Nehru had become weak. He had been firmer. If he had been firmer and told, yes, well, I can't even do this bill, You can do this whatever you like. I know what I shall do sort of business. This is what I punk it. I have not a spell doubt about it.
But as it is, because he was weak, what happened?
What happened? He came and introduced the bill. They say, I want to have him introduced. They agreed to disagree. So he got on the citizenship bill
as he likes.
Immigration, immigration, they had all been agreed. Those two had been agreed upon. This is again going to be done in Indian Pakistan. Mahatma Gandhi had told Jawaharlal, in regard to the registration of Indians in Ceylon, the citizens of Ceylon, mere declaration by them should be taken as satisfactory. We are going through any inquiry process and investigation process and all kinds of restrictions and limitations. Jawaharlal really did not carry out Gandhi's wishes in fact.
He allowed DS to put grandfather clauses and things.
That is right. Grandfather clauses, you mustn't marry called Indian law, you must marry called this law. You know, the niece marriage. Marriage is not an adultery in India. Is adultery in Islam. Mm-hmm. Or is adultery or something in writing adultery, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Or incest.
But the what about the question of voting rights? They had to be citizens in order to vote.
That is how the dirty trick was played. You see, before the soldiery constitution came into being, nearly 160,000 Indians, under provisions of the Dharma Constitution, had been given civic rights and they had voted. And that's how they had, I think, 7 members from plantation areas.
That's right.
And they also influenced what putting up electorates by their marginal votes. My plea at the cabinet meeting was, please give these people the rights which they have enjoyed. Don't do anything that is inhuman. Don't take away from them what they have already got. You then restrict the numbers at the most to 160,000 plus twice over, allowing for children and this and the other. But one of our friends says, no. Our estimate does not give more than a certain number which is about 50,000 different. There was only a difference of 50,000. No, I pleaded, I begged, I did all kinds of things in this house. No. To this day, we are unable to solve this question.
What do you say to their argument that these people were not Ceylonese in spirit and aliens and so on and so forth?
That is just an argument, an excuse. A number of people today in the plantation area, I estimate the number to be over 50%, who never want to go to India, who have never seen the count of India, who will stay here, who are now speaking good Sinhalese. You know, today on my farm in Bavonia, I have a manager's wife, a young girl, who has passed SSC in Sinhalese. And when I get letters on a singular, only official language act, from headquarters in Ceylon, I got to send for the girl to translate the stuff for me.
Yes, but then what about, under your suggestion, the other 40% or 30% would also get votes? People who have connections with India?
No. Because under the Dharma Constitution, they were given rights on the basis of permanent settlement. In fact, it was I who first had the word Ceylonese introduced into our legislation in the Land Development Ordinance when I wanted the alienation of lands restricted to Ceylonese. And I defined who Ceylonese were. That was according to international law. The persons who were born in Ceylon
And who means long they found at home? That law is still in force, as a matter of fact.
I know something else, which I think in regard to the Indian and Pakistani Act, when they were discussed with Nehru or somewhere, I think it had, DS had wanted a certain clause inserted, you see. But Nehru had been against it and they had dropped it. But isn't it true that they tried to slip in the same object by the way they defined certain status?
At that time, they did not have in contemplation the amendment to the Constitutional Order in Council regarding elections.
Yes, that's right.
You see, till that time, the decision was, I think, British citizen must be a British subject or whatever it may be, the legal physiology used. Thereafter, they did this dirty trick and said you must be a citizen drawn by instant or by registration.
What was, he was not in the cabinet then, was he, Mr. G.G. Pranamara? But what was the Tamil Congress standpoint?
You will find it in the headset. Mr. G.G. Pranamara had signed a pledge that he would at no time do or say anything adverse to the Indians enjoying civic rights.
Sign a pledge to whom?
To the All Ceylon Tamil Congress, of which the Indian section was an integral part. Right?
But,
I tell you the history. Pannamalam had been made a minister soon after the Citizenship and Indian and Immigration Bills had been passed, but not the Indian and Pakistani Bill. The provisions of the Indian-Pakistani Bill were known. They had been discussed with General Nehru. The draft was available. So at that time, the Tamil members of the cabinet were Chidambaram, Ponnambalam, and myself. About 3 or 4 days before the bill was to be introduced into Parliament and the matter had to be finally passed by the Cabinet, a deputation, unofficial, consisting of Mota, Pranaman, Velupilla and others, came to my house and wanted my support for the Indian cause. I said I could not discuss the matter with them because I was member of the cabinet. Then they told me that Pannamalam was going to support them fully and that if I supported Pannamalam, they stood a very good chance of getting what they wanted. As a matter of fact, it was known all the time that I was responsible for raising the interest on the question. And the opposition to Indians being here was all due to me. That has been recognized. The Indians all voted to person against me at the by-election that was held in Moni Amuritri, Manar. Then they asked me Sir, will you kindly discuss this matter with Mr. Ponnambalam? I said, this isn't a private matter. It's a public matter. If Ponnambalam won't discuss the matter with me, I'm always ready. Although he and I have been political enemies for a fairly long time. The canon in the Hastings was that I was selling the Tamils to the UNP and the Singhalese. They're all in the correspondence, you know. And suddenly. So then will you stay on here? You'll go down to Mr. Ponnambalam just now and bring him here. I waited 1 hour, 2 hours, nothing to be. No telephone message. At the end of 2.5 hours, the message came through. Sir, Mr. Ponnambalam thinks it's not good to have this matter discussed in your house. Would you mind discussing the matter with him in his office at the fisheries building? Fisheries under his charge as minister. Certainly. I don't mind at all. Shall we then, sir, fix a time with him? By all means, I'll keep myself at this post. Very good. Time was fixed. I went up. Told him all about it. I wanted him to be firm. He knew that I was going to oppose this. And I was going to oppose him right through. Ponnambalam, if you stand by me in this matter, you can be certain that DS and I have been frightened to do it before the cabinet or before parliament. If you and I resign on this issue, DS will find himself in the pickle. That's a matter which we have got to consider very carefully, he said. And he will also talk to DS, he said. But I told him, look here, he and I are cabinet ministers, we can talk to each other quite freely, we can talk to more than them quite freely. I've already told DS in writing that he is going to quote danger in regard to this matter. Said Ponnambalam, well, I'll consider the matter as you know tomorrow. Said Ponnambalam, well, I'll consider the matter as you know tomorrow. Righto. We meet again tomorrow in the minister's office. We talk the matter all over again. These are new finds, we better consider them again. Put off next day. Another day next day. The following day, cabinet. Matter went up. Nothing was possible. I thought the cabinet agreed to push the bill through. Of course they did. Mm. I was the only man to oppose it. For 1 hour I held forth, asking my friends not to be unreasonable, to be human. They were all blind. At that cabinet meeting, Ponnambalam would not say one word in support.
Who was the one who argued most forcibly for the bill?
Nobody argued.
Your argument was all against the bill.
And that was mine. All of them took it for granted. He had a thing going to say all that he wanted to say, let him say it. That is how it happened. Nothing else. But when it came to the parliamentary party meeting, after the cabinet meeting, Kunna supported me. I worshipped old dears and told dears, don't make a mistake. For mercy's sake, try and get Jagaral's consent or do something.
No, I mean, did they bother to try and counter your argument?
No. They made up their mind. Do I not tell them what I was going to do in so many words? I made it quite clear to them that they would not have my support. Right. So did you vote against the bill? I'm coming to that. Well, Bill had its second reading. Division was called. I walked out of our chamber. D.S. was shocked. He sent Ratnayaka, the prisoner was in it, running after me to come and vote at his own day. I went away. So that night we had correspondence with all now in the Hampton. We went in the Hampton, I think about the 14th or 15th of December 1948. I then referred, and I had to give my explanation as a minister for being dismissed from the cabinet, to the letter that I had written to D.S. before I met Ponnambalam. Ponnambalam had told Mota and others, Indians, that what I had told him about the letter was all a fib. That I had written no letter to D.S. When I started with this letter, they all got a shock of their lives. I went to the whole first pond. They were all there in Hanson, you know.
This is before or after the bit?
Immediately after the second meeting and before the committee stage. You find them there. Then, in the committee stage, I opposed it. Before that, I didn't say a word in public against the bill. I did not vote against the bill. I was dismissed from the cabinet. When I was dismissed from the cabinet, I had to come out with my explanation, the convention, in Parliament. When Mother and other women saw Ponnambalam last Ponnambalam, you said Sundingam and not bringing letter to D.S. For the first time, he found this letter that he wrote to D.S. before he even saw you. Oh, forget about it. Sent Ponnambalam to Moba. Of course, they wouldn't forget like that. Now, after I was dismissed from the cabinet, the Daily News had a brilliant editorial praising me for the services that I had done as Mr. Kamasan Craig, but said that the conventions regarding collective responsibility had to be carried out. Our constitution enjoined us to carry out those conventions. And always was a regrettable step. This had taken the right step in getting me out of the cabinet. When I read that, I said to myself, obviously, our friends do not know the conventions of the Constitution. They are enjoined to follow the conventions of the British Parliament. There is one section of the Constitution on account of states. We are, in regard with prime ministers and so on and so forth, we are bound by the conventions. Unless, of course, written law in the country is against our existing those conventions. So when I read through this, I was not surprised. I had my own idea of collective responsibility in cabinet. So I went to...
You were not intending to resign yourself?
No, no. Oh, no. Because I knew what the conventions were. So I went to Ivor Jennings.
No, I was wondering whether as a protest you wanted not only to abstain from voting but to resign as well.
No, no. If I had not been asked to resign, that way I'd be dismissed, you know, cabinet minister. I would never have resigned. Because I knew the convention. I went completely.
Yes.
I went to Ivor Jennings. I didn't have the books myself. I have been studying the constitution of Great Britain for a number of years. That has said matters I actually grew up in the constitution, so to I asked Jennings, will you let me have reference to some of the constitutional books? The library was behind me. Oh yes, he said. I picked the book that I wanted. There it was! My question was perfectly correct. What was it?
As long as a minister does not speak against any proposal of the cabinet in public or in parliament, and as long as it does not vote against any measure of the cabinet on conscientious grounds, it is a matter entirely for the Prime Minister to decide whether he is to continue in the cabinet or not. Two examples are given. One was Sir Charles Dilke. Other I forget, but I got it from the book. I came back, wrote it once later. The interpretation of Cricket's responsibility is all wrong. This is a true position. It was open to the Prime Minister to keep me in the cabinet if he thought my services were useful and to advantage of the country. I did not vote against the government. I did not speak against the government. Therefore, it was open to the Prime Minister. So the story went, I can't avoid for its truth. When this letter appeared, D.S. Ranayaka rang up Jennings. Jennings, did you read the letter of Sundaralingam in the press, in the paper this morning? Yes. I thought you were a judicial expert.
He had consulted Jennings earlier.
That is it. Jennings had given advice about collective responsibility. For a number of years, you know, they made a mistake in law college. It regards the document of responsibility and the conditionary gate. The law college lecturers did not know this. They are making a mistake. They have pointed it out. Now, of course, they rectified and used my name and so on. In fact, I am told in one of those questions, they had said they had referred to my saying. And quoted a passage from the letter that I wrote to the Daily News. And asked the examinees to comment on the citation.
When this Registration Act was passed, and these people disqualified and they had to go through a process of registration, the CIC boycotted the thing for a while.
Quite true.
Have you any comments to make on this tactic?
Yes, I have this comment to make. If on that decision, which in my view was not rightly taken, if they had taken the right decision, they themselves must have kept out of Parliament, which they did not do, but advised the people not to send any applications or registration. If they had stuck to that advice right through, things might have been different. When they started turning and turning and twisting and having somersaults, D.S. and I went, what are you doing? They went and back to the article in front of this. In front of Jesus' office, they practice satyagraha in the veranda. Jesus go walk up, smile at them, walk in, walk out. That was all called off. To no purpose. Utterly foolish. If you take a step like that, you must follow it up to the bitter end. That they never did.
But looking at it, it seems a foolish step, because from the point of view of registration, after 1.5 years, they decided to quickly register. And they didn't register as many as they would have registered if they started from the word go.
But they are in the snake. Perhaps you are not aware of it.
Yeah.
They had to produce evidence of continuous residence for a number of years in this and the other. In the course of my arguments with DS, I had said, look here, the census returns for 1946 census had a column which stated the number of years particular individuals were resident in those areas. And that was conclusive proof of the period of residence of particular individuals. Moreover, and there was a classified list in the official report showing the number of persons who had been resident over 10 years, over 5 years, and so on and so forth. You know what we just did? a thing of which I was not aware, till M.D.A. Jayawardena, when he was Minister of Finance, came out quite casually and said, "Those returns had been called for from Census Office by Lewis and Nalka and burnt." What do you think of that? What do you think of that? If they had been honest about even their act, they should not have destroyed official evidence about residence. They had decided upon a certain number to be registered as citizens. They wanted to keep to that number. They didn't want to exceed that number. For that purpose, they had all kinds of monkeying with interpretation and implementation effect.
Fair enough, but as it is, I think the boycott meant that the numbers registered were perhaps more or less a little or more less than they would have actually had registered if they had encouraged the Indians to start earlier.
I have my doubts. I tell you why. I think our friends had been maneuvering all along. Even those who were to sit in judgment over applications or registration.
You mean the officers of the civil service?
Not civil service, they're special recruited, no? They were not civil servants. Actually, all of them were not civil servants. Perhaps the head of the department.
Head of the department.
And of those fellows who went around the country.
Yes.
Holding inquiries and these applications. I think there must have been some sort of, you know, all kinds of instructions do take place.
UNP nominees?
No. Don't you go and register freely. You can always find a loophole, you know.
Yes, but wouldn't they have to go through the head of the department?
No. The head of the department always said yes. You have got to take before the Supreme Court. All appeal had to go to Supreme Court. Every appeal had to go to Supreme Court and payment of 5 rupees stamp and all that kind of stuff. Very wrong. Till indeed Jayawardena came out of the department when he was Minister of Finance, I wasn't aware of the strict rate by years and time. I can never forgive him for that. Although he was a great friend of mine, but it didn't matter. But this action is at all justifiable.
And what comments have you to make on the Bandaranayaka Shastri Pact?
Srimao
Shastri.
Srimao Shastri Pact.
Yes.
That is not the only pact I have had. It won't be the last pact. It won't be the last pact.
But isn't it being implemented now?
It's too early to comment. Judging from what is stated in the press, the number of persons who are being regarded as Indian nationals, who till now were regarded as stateless persons, I don't think they are making enough. And they can't make enough. In any case, the exchange question will be so serious, I find it out. Myself to the earth. Exchange question is so serious that they could be victimized. That's my own impression about that.
You mean these people taking their money away?
That's right. You find the Mahanayak correspondence reference to this.
What about the question of separate electoral registers? As far as I can understand it, the SLFP coalition is inclined to ask for it. The UNP is not committed, but I think they are against it.
Do you realize, Roberts, that there is, in our legislative enactments, an act giving 4 seats to registered Indians on a separate literal basis. The main provision, apart from this separate literate, so these Indians, four members to be returned, that act was to lapse in 10 years after its promulgation. That was after Kothravala's second agreement with Nehru, 1954, I believe. Last year, that act has lapsed. There are a single election being held. Even the elections officer, who is in law bound to have elections conducted for representatives to the parliament, even he did not move on the matter. And not a single person in parliament ever raised this question, except myself. When I was there, you used to kick up a row.
So we never had a
election? No, no, no. Of course, you know, when I gave witness.